Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
Hey, guess who's back? You missed me. I know you missed me. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Imagine This Podcast.
That was about the 5 seconds we would allow you to sort of have a time all your own, a room of your own podcast.
That was it. I know it's back to everybody else. I just wanted to acknowledge that it's now officially season three. I know we had season three opener last week, and that was awesome at Sunstone, and it was great to listen to it. Super awkward not to hear my voice on it, but that's all right. Those are my feelings. But now I'm back. I'm back on the pod, everybody. So everybody remember now season three can officially start. Everyone, let's settle in, everybody. All right, get your popcorn. Another episode of Imagine This Podcast in its real form with me, Mac Antigua, and I'm joined again. Hey, David. Hey, Lindsay. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, now we can talk. Okay.
Yeah, all now right. You can talk. Now you can talk. Now you can talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, Mac, we did miss you.
You guys did your best Celine Dion, Your Heart Would Go On. In fact, it was a little too comfortable. Quite honest, you guys were a little too comfortable. And so I'm glad to shake up the dynamic. I'm glad to shake up the dynamic to do that.
I will. Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, listening back to a live recording, it's amazing how different the dynamic is when you can talk to someone right next to you. And here we are back in Zoom recording. Until this Delta thing calms down a bit.
So. Till Delta becomes Lambda and the rest of the country gets more familiar with the Greek alphabet as a result of all the variants developing. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're vaccinated. Hope you're masked out there as you're listening to this podcast. We're happy to bring back the arts and culture vibes here in Milwaukee. Later on the episode, guys, our main guest today is Kurt Ravenwood, Milwaukee director of the new movie Corridor that's being filmed. Thank you, David. Producer Kurt Ravenwood, producing the film Corridor, which is produced and filmed in Milwaukee with Milwaukee talent. Diverse cast. Excited. We'll be talking to him after the break. But before we get to that, let's theme it.
Wait a second, Mac. I wanted to ask, actually, because we actually had some vacation check-ins last week from Lindsay and me.
We did.
How is my hometown of San Francisco?
Oh, my gosh. It's not the same without David Lee around. People told me. They're like, how's David
doing? Everybody you ran into, right?
I was on the cable car. Hey, how's David Lee doing? I'm like, which David Lee? You know, the David Lee went to... You know, grew up just adjacent to Chinatown, went to the Academy for the Arts and da da blah blah blah. I'm like, oh wait, that David Lee. Okay. Yeah, he's holding his own. He's locking it down out here.
Unfortunately, they were asking you about a different David Lee.
Lots of David Lees. Are you talking about the NBA player David Lee? No, not that David Lee. The other David Lee. All right. Yeah, no, city is amazing. I got to go to the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, which is an awesome arts. Not just a museum, but it's also a working space and convening space. They have a project going on around a universal basic income for artists that they're experimenting with. Nobody was around for me to talk about it, but that was cool. So
you didn't just like run into one of the offices and be like, hey, how's that pilot going?
I want to talk to somebody about this pilot. They're like, we just opened for COVID, man. Like, give us a break. I will say they have a really cool poster exhibit around immigrants, and they have one that's geared around a story of a fictional nurse who came over on the 70s on a nurse's visa, and each poster captures a year in the life as this nurse left the Philippines to escape martial law and to make for her family. And the nurse's name is Flor Villanueva, right, is the name of the nurse. And I have to say, my mom's name, who came over on a nurse's visa in the 70s, however, not through San Francisco, through the East Coast to work in Chicago. Her name is Flor de Villa Gallinato at the time. So it was just eerie to see my mom's name and literally tell the story. I took photos of it and I texted to her. I'm like, Mom, somebody captured your life. And she responded back with a sheepish, like, well, what do you know? How about that? And that was it. I didn't want to dig deeper. It's texting, you know, like I didn't want to get into it. And I wasn't ready to cry. Like, on text or anything, but it was really powerful. So yeah, that's something that resonated with me. And one more thing I'll resonate. Sorry. I got to go to the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and amazing pieces there. And one amazing piece that really struck me was a new work, I believe by Charles Gaines, Louis Gaines, I'll double check on that. But what this artist did was transposed the majority and minority dissenting opinions of the Dred Scott case, the Supreme Court case, and transposed it to an actual score, like use the letters and transpose them to actual notes. And you could hear the score of the opinion. And it was haunting and melancholic, as you could imagine. It was just struck there. So, and that's, I sort of stood there for a while, just taking that all in. And that's a couple of the treasures of what art can do for you on vacation in San Francisco. So that's my report.
I really appreciate that in-depth and deep report on the art scene in San Francisco. But what we really want to know is, how does the boba compare to Midwest boba?
It's so much awesome. It's, oh man, Midwest boba sucks, everybody. Like, it's swill. Like, you, I'm not going to say no offense. Offense should be taken, because what we're doing is a war crime on our taste buds.
On gelatinous tapioca cubes,
whatever we're taking in here.
Where does the Midwest go wrong, though? Like, how much can you possibly mess up?
Well, they actually use fruit juices over there, right? An actual fruit and actual, like, they take great care. And the boba game over there, I think I had at least one a day, which is probably why I'm damn near diabetic. But I don't mean to joke about that. It was just a lot of sugar. I'm probably still hopped on it right now the way I'm talking. But the boba game, David, is amazing in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And in the Midwest, it's really, yeah, just a reminder of how disappointing it is.
Art and boba thumbs up. I'm sorry.
Art and boba thumbs up. Art and boba thumbs up. Mass game on point in San Francisco. Cable cars are free because they just reopened them. That's a thumbs up. That's it. And and the weather, thumbs up. 65 degrees and sunny every day. So got the layer up. That's pretty cool. I heard it was pretty hot here while I was gone.
Yeah, it was hot. Yeah. It was hot.
Uncomfortable climate volatility hot.
Correct.
Yeah. Whew, that's a whole nother topic. Well, anyway,
that's another podcast. That's a whole other podcast. So thanks, David, for letting me report out on the vacation trips. Hopefully with this variant, those of you listening will get to go away.
Able to go.
Yeah. And I'll say this, the airport, I stopped over in Las Vegas.
It's the future, the San Francisco airport, right?
It is the future. First of all, that airport crushes. That airport crushes. The food's amazing. The furniture's comfortable. There's a Harvey Milk exhibit as you're walking through, which is so cool to learn about the history. I got to teach my kids about Harvey Milk and what that means. And they got to learn that the pride flag as we know it was crafted by an artist based out of San Francisco, and things like this they take for granted about these things. It's like, here you go, guys. We're in it. Great. And also in Las Vegas too, because we had to stop there. Don't fly nonstop. Mask game, amazing. Like, everybody masking up out there too. So respect to everyone masking up in the airport. I did not experience any weird things like we've seen on the internet. So I did not. Everybody was playing. Everybody's on the same team out there. So high fives to the Southwest Flyers and those at gate B12 and C21s at our respective airports. Is that the rundown? Everybody get the rundown on my vacation? We did it.
Everybody did the rundown on the vacation. Apparently only Lindsay did not engage in art stuff while she was in Washington, D.C., by the way.
Hey, that's not true. That's not true. I just didn't explain it in great detail, nor did I come to any great revelations. It was like, you know, I went to a great orchestra concert. I played some harpsichord, and that was that. That was pretty much that.
It's a usual D.C. trip. Play a little harpsichord, give it a Wolf Trap, catch some music.
Yeah.
You didn't go to Wolf Trap, did you? Was it Wolf Trap?
I did go to Wolf Trap, yeah.
Oh, I just pulled the first memory I had, which
that's
was
true.
Seeing,
yeah.
Seeing Guster
site,
and
site of my old Wolf. Site of my old internship, beginning of my career in arts administration.
And Wolf Trap.
So always got to go back. Yeah.
And now it's home of like REO Speedwagon comes through and plays like an acoustic set at Wolf Trap, right? It's that kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. No big deal. I do want to talk about this. I know we've riffed a little bit before we get to the guest, but our guest is talking about producing film. We all know that David's a filmmaker, director, producer, so we know that. But I want to invite Lindsay and myself. I'm going to invite myself to talk about. We've got history making film as well, isn't that right, Lindsay? And we're going to share stories about that, right, Lindsay?
Yeah, we have professional experience.
Yes. Tell me about your professional experience creating film.
Well. when I think about filmmaking, I think about being in the, so I grew up in suburban Madison, and there's a program at UW-Madison called College for Kids. No additional K in college, just
wait,
normal
is it backwards K?
Backwards K. Backwards K.
Backwards K.
College for Kids.
So the premise was, you know, you applied to be part of this program, and if you got in, you got to go to the campus for 3 weeks and take three separate courses, but with one cohort of people. So you moved throughout the program with, you know, like 20 kids. And I chose a 3 week combination that included a filmmaking class. And we were basically, I think, taught some extreme basics about how to use like a camcorder or something, because this was, you know, I think 2002. We made a film inspired by that fish that you could buy, that like the singing fish that you put up on your wall that would sing some songs about water. I don't know. I don't remember.
Or
it was
Christmas,
you,
or it was any like, other holiday.
Yeah, it was a you know, probably 60s song about the water. I really should have looked this up because now I can't remember what the song is. But the premise of our film was that this fish would not leave us, that we were just, you know, traveling around Madison and the fish would come out of nowhere. It was like haunting us. So there's a lot of that song over and over in the film. And that's basically it. I remember being proud of it. Like a really stupid premise. But, you know, I think I was 12. So that's basically it. I did not go on to pursue any further film production after that 1 week long college course. But how about you, Mac?
My experience with film or making film mainly was back in my days in college. I was one of the most sought after actors on the student film circuit. I did a lot of work, mainly because I worked for free and I just said yes to a lot of gigs. So one of my favorite performances was...
No. I'm going to need a little bit more. When you say most sought after, like how many films are we talking? How many?
I did at least
films?
Eight. I did eight.
Wow.
I did eight.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, these are only 5 minute films, short films and student projects. And I'm sure they're all probably done at the last second because very much guerrilla filmmaking, like literally on the run. I think my most memorable one was a non-speaking role, but it was a silent film. I played someone kind of getting ready for work, and it turned out I was an axe murderer. Like that was the last reveal. Like I was taking my axe to work. So there you go. So that I remember that role.
It was a literal American Psycho.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it was pretty derivative. You know, it's sophomore film making or something. Literally sophomoric and sophomores for making it. But it was neat. And again, the other thing about filmmaking that is, it's always sort of you're always sort of problem solving in the moment because you think of what you're going to do. And then it's like, do I have the light or this didn't map out as we thought when we planned it. And so you're constantly in the moment, or at least witnessing in the moment, how to solve problems and doing that. So that always stuck with me, that folks were always, and maybe that resonates with you, David. It's always sort of there's what you plan for. And then the reality is when you're in the field and what you have to manage, be it people or the resources and whatnot.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, that issue of how filmmakers are always solving problems is exactly the thing about filmmaking, right? I was visiting with a lawyer a couple earlier this week, and she had mentioned with me that her son is in wants to be a filmmaker, is in film school, and she had expressed a little bit of trepidation about that, and I was like, look, like it's fine, like he's probably learning how to solve a lot of problems, because whether it's, you know, making sure that you're capturing the right scenes, the right stuff, or in editing, like editing is basically taking hours and hours of footage and solving how you make a movie out of it, right? How do you reassemble a director's vision into, or a vision of the screenwriter or whatever, into a coherent story, right? So I think filmmaking is just all about problem solving, and I think an incredible way of looking at the world and being able to put pieces back together. I really appreciate your professional stories of your filmmaking past. I can't wait to hear from Kurt. coming up.
Yeah, I imagine you and Kirk could probably talk a little more in the weeds, you know, about, do I use this lens or when really is the golden hour? Is it 3:30 to 4:30? Is it 4 to 5? Yeah, you guys can wonk out all you want, but just letting you know that.
You know, there's a poster in my office of the film that I made out in Los Angeles called The Marriage of Charlie Johnson. And talking about, you know, problem solving, we ended up trying to shoot that whole movie at golden hour. One of my favorite movies of all time is this movie called Days of Heaven by Terrence Malick, which is shot mostly only at magic hour, which is, you know, about 15 minutes twice a day. And, you know, when you think about what that means in so far as like shooting a full length movie, that's crazy, right? And so, you know, for a low budget movie, trying to get a group of folks up in Northern California to wake up at, you know, 4 o'clock to be able to catch the 15-20 minutes of golden hour in the morning, and then we would move and set up, and then, you know, set up for getting ready to shoot at around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, we were basically just shot, every day, you know, for an hour or so, except for all of our night shots. But we tried to shoot every daylight setup in golden hour, which made the movie look beautiful, but of course also was just a hell of a thing to actually shoot.
Mac, that's a funny way for us to learn that our workday is now going to start at 4 a.m. moving forward.
For now on, we will only work during the golden hour, which is 15 minutes in that morning and 15 minutes.
Well, that's the other thing about filmmaking, though, right? It's just a ton of preparation, right? Like, we were working from 4 in the morning until the nighttime. It was just, we were actually only shooting.
Setting up the shot, getting props, people reading their sides.
That's right.
Making sure all the bagels were at craft services, you know.
That's right.
Blah blah blah.
Was also the caterer on that movie shoot. Super low budget, right? So as the only person with cooking experience, I ended up cooking as well. So
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I'm imagining I'm wearing a worn out apron that has Paddington Bear on it, and it says "Kiss the Cook" right on it. That's what he wore. It's one of those sort of. It's like, oh wait, that's cooking, David, not director David. So we don't have to listen to him. We just have to ask him.
More food.
Yeah, more food, more gruel. For the rest of us. And then you took off your apron and put on your director's beret and you're like, more beatings until the performance is improved. Just like he does here in the office. Just like he does here in the office.
I cook for you and also berate.
Exactly. Yeah.
I haven't seen the first one yet.
Yeah, we had a lot more of the latter than the first. He has one of those like, it's what's weird is he wears like a cravat and he has that little director's like megaphone and then wears like that beret. It's really weird. That being said, I'm sure our next guest, Kurt Ravenwood, doesn't do that, but we'll hear more about Kurt. He's a Milwaukee director, producer, and creative entrepreneur, born in Shawano, Wisconsin, came to Milwaukee for college and graduated in 2011 from UWM's film program, Hey Panthers. After graduating, he started working as a freelance commercial producer, eventually partnering up with Matt Sabjak and Sam Hokerton to form SRH, which became a full-service creative agency with a team of 25 and clients like Harley-Davidson, Sherlin's Hospital, and Palermo's Pizza. Outside of SRH, he produces independent films for Milwaukee filmmakers like Carol Brandt, Jonathan Olson, and Wes Tank. Recently, he's partnered with Wes Tank on a series of Dr. Seuss, Dr. Dre mashups. Check out season one of our pod to see that. Led to a streaming deal with Kadoodle TV called Story Raps, and he produces along Tank Think Productions. We're going to be talking about his most ambitious project, which is Jonathan Olson's Corridor, a feature film which recently raised $22,000 from the Milwaukee community. And one more note, he's also one of the producers of Popper Baxton's Sickly Stew, which if you look carefully on IMDb, features one MacArthur Antigua and David Lee as police officers in it. Lincoln, you'll miss it. After the break, Kurt. Some are slow, some are up high, and some are down low, but not one of them is quite like another. Don't ask me why, go ask your mother. Kurt, welcome to the pod.
Hey, good to be here.
Kurt, where are you calling in from? Where's the secret layer?
I'm calling in from Pasadena, California, where it's beautiful and sunny. No tornadoes here. My power has been on the whole day.
Look at that California flex. You know what I mean, usually a state which we equate with wildfires.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, how are the fires down there?
They are surprisingly north right now. Down here in the desert, it's okay, you know, but the smoke, I mean, it's serious. It's serious stuff out here. So No, I'm here. I'm here for a year on sabbatical. I'm taking a break to recenter and focus a little bit on some projects. Really enjoying it, but I miss the hell out of Milwaukee, especially right now in the summer.
Yeah,
even the tornadoes. Even I miss the tornadoes.
Well, that's the thing. Milwaukee's a summer town, right? You get through the winter to get to summer. So I think that's fair. And again, I really appreciate your knowledge of what's going on in Milwaukee, knowing our audience is going like, why do you got this out of towner, this carpetbagger? How dare you? I don't know what voice that was. I don't know what Joe Milwaukee was, but he sounded very T. Boone Pickens. At a, what's going on? That just came out of nowhere. We'll unpack it with my therapist later. We're so glad you're on, Kurt, because it's so great to have creatives on. David's excited as a fellow filmmaker, so this could get wonky later. You guys might be talking lens flares and when does the golden hour really start? That may happen, and then at that point I'll check out mentally. But before we get to that, we always like to talk about our guests. No matter if they are creative and artists, they've been influenced by the arts and culture, right? And we love this origin story. So shout out to Lindsay Sheridan, who this is from her. Tell us a story about an arts and cultural experience that left a strong imprint on you. It could be formative or could it be last week. That's fine. Book you read, performance you witnessed, or might be something you even created or performed. Tell us a story about it.
All right. This is a great Milwaukee story. I graduated UWM in 2011. So 10 years ago now. Man, when's that reunion? Are we doing a reunion? Are reunions a thing anymore?
They are a thing.
I don't think they are. I think Facebook killed it. Anyway, so 10 years ago, I'm coming out of college. I've got my senior thesis film in the festival. I'm so excited, so pumped, super, super nervous, but at the same time, like way over cocky and arrogant, like both at once, which, you know,
yeah,
that we'll unpack that with my therapist later, as you said. But yeah, so in 2011, a lot of people are going to remember this, and I think this might be a formative moment for a lot of people, but Vilmos Zsigmond was the famous cinematographer of many movies, Deer Hunter, Long Goodbye, just like one of the greats, one of the gods of the industry.
Yeah.
Came and visited Milwaukee, and they did a screening of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, a film he shot in 35 millimeter, and it was amazing, and he talked. And so that movie, number one, that was the first time I had seen it. So Close Encounters of the Third Kind is probably in my top five. There's just something about that movie that feels so movie, like it just feels like a movie about movies in a way, you know? And so I saw that, I was blown away, just like completely humbled. And then even cooler, they did a lighting workshop with Vilmos Zsigmond at RDI Studios.
Oh, wow.
And so there I got to see like some of our local like cinematography gods, like working with Vilmos Zsigmond, like who was there? Rob Fisher, Mark Maimon, Bob Donnelly, Brad Ramond, Vinny Bassesi, like all these guys that I didn't really know, but I could only just look up to were there working with this cinematic genius. And so I remember at that moment just being like, okay, like I don't need to move. I don't need to move anywhere. Milwaukee's got it. It's got this beautiful theater that just like transported me into a magical place. And we're bringing in all this talent, and we're also surrounded by talent. So I just, that one I always think about, the kind of magic of that moment.
That's such a great story, Kurt. I was watching The Bonfire of the Vanities last night because it's on HBO Max and coming off, shot by Vilmos Zsigmond, and there's that incredible, if you've never seen it, there's this incredible Brian De Palma, like sort of 10-minute opening tracking shot of Bruce Willis coming into some event. It just goes on and on and on, and like so many different lighting changes, so much stuff happens in the background. It's an incredible shot that only Brian De Palma and Vilmos Zsigmond could have pulled off. So how funny that your story, right, is sort of reminded me of that moment. The other thing too about that story that I wanted to sort of draw back to our guest from last week, which we had Meg Strobel on last week, who also
I love Meg,
also a Milwaukee UWM film school graduate, and like again this idea that like that Milwaukee has a top 10 film school that can produce folks like you, Meg, hundreds of others, and just putting all of this incredible talent, right, attracting talent from all over the state and all over the nation, and just sort of creating this sort of pool of talent of filmmakers in our city is just a story that we don't tell enough. And that, to your point earlier about, like, you don't have to move, right? Like, for folks coming to our city to do this thing, there's all of this stuff here already. And it's such a rich environment to do this work. And you know, a lot of credit to folks we've already talked about, like, you know, Matt Sablejack, you know, John Jackson, all these folks who've really begun to invest, right, in the film infrastructure of our city is just incredible.
It really is. And I understand the irony of stating that. It's true that, like, so one of the reasons I came out here was to get that perspective back.
Yeah.
Because it can be a real huge challenge in the Midwest. Yeah. You know, out here they have a saying, I don't know if it's out here, but they have a saying. Someone has a saying. They do. That, like, trying to make films outside of Hollywood is like trying to be a marine biologist in Iowa. And I think that's true. It is. It's very, very difficult to try to make make it your profession, filmmaking. Mm. It's really, really difficult. So that was hard, and it's been hard trying to get these movies made, and it's a lot of work. You know, so with some exciting stuff, you guys had Wes Tank on the show. Wes and I were, you know, really the ones making the Dr. Seuss videos, these videos last year, and then we got a streaming deal with a kids show. Like, it's been really exciting. Mm-hmm. So it gave me the opportunity to kind of come out here and just explore. And it's great. I love it. LA is great, but it's not easy to make movies out here. Yeah. It's way easier in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Way easier.
I wish I moved here in 2010 from Los Angeles. My wife and I were living in West Hollywood for about 10 years. And, you know, that wasn't on the welcome brochure, right? When we moved to Milwaukee, nobody told me, right, that, you know, there would be this incredible film infrastructure here in town, that there was this incredible community of folks. And so, like, when I moved, right, when we moved, I was like, I guess my film career is over. Had I known 10 years ago, right, that there was all of this stuff. And I think partially it was timing on our end, right, that, like, there was sort of right around the transition of Milwaukee film at the time. And, like, we'd heard about the festival, but, like, it just the infrastructure just wasn't as apparent as I think it is now with folks like you and other folks, right, who are just like Carol, right, who's edited an important video for us. She edited our 4 and 4 day video a couple of years, 2 years ago, like, Pat Buckley. I mean, a lot of the folks who we've been interacting with and have had on the show and have been experiencing their work has just been, it's just incredible. The level of talent here is incredible.
And just the intersections, right? I mean, I've produced one of Carol's films. Carol did illustrations for mine and Wes's project. And just, like, everyone is helping, all these great artists helping each other on these projects. It's huge. It's huge. It's how it works. It's amazing.
So how do you think, as someone who's come up, right, in our city and now, you know, has worked in our city and has worked throughout the nation, how has Milwaukee specifically, like, sort of imprinted on you artistically, and how does it manifest itself as a city, as a character in your work?
Oh man. Okay. That is a big one. yeah. I mean, in my work, personally, Milwaukee for me has this energy that is very unique. It's a problematic town in a lot of ways, but it also has these deep roots of, like, hard work and blue collar energy. I know that's kind of a Bobby Portis cliche thing to say these days, but it is true though. Like just seeing, like, it's little small stuff, like going downtown and seeing, like, the cornerstone of a foundation of one of these buildings, just like the raw heft of Milwaukee. When you come to California, everything is light and airy, and, like, Milwaukee just has this grit and this heft that I think when I was there, I just thought this is what it is. But now that I've got some distance from it, I'm kind of romanticizing it more and more and more. And it's really, really cool. Like, it's just this cool energy. I was back for the Bucks mm-hmm. the finals games just to be there because I had to. I'm, you know, long suffering Bucks fan. had to be there.
Yeah.
And just walking around the city and seeing, like, also though, just the life it's getting and the energy that's happening in the city right now is really inspiring too. Another thing I couldn't quite see when I was in it, you know, so, so for me, for my personal work, you know, identity of Milwaukee and it's like grit and energy. I really love, and then, just as a city, that's what it is for me. It's this grounding thing, but more and more and more I see people doing aspirational stuff. Like when I first moved to Milwaukee, there wasn't these murals everywhere. There wasn't this, well, speaking of Meg Strobel, like these amazing sculptures mm-hmm. downtown. Mm-hmm. There wasn't the Pfizer. Like in the last 10 years, the life that sort of sprouted out of the cracks of concrete has been amazing. Mm-hmm. We have a ton of more work to do, but it's just really, really cool to see. And it just gives you a pep in your step a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. That's what mm-hmm. Milwaukee does for me. It just makes me feel really good inside.
brought to you by Visit Milwaukee, by the way, this last statement brought yeah, to you. By, hopefully they're sending makes you some scratch good. On that. Cause that was a hell of a pitch for Milwaukee.
You know, I wanted to sort of pull on this thread just a little bit. Like you'd mentioned that that you know, our city still has a lot of work to do, right? And clearly does, right? It's beset by many challenges, historical, all that stuff. We believe here at Imagine that like the arts and culture community has a role to play in addressing some of those issues, right? It might not be the full solution to all of them, but it's got a really important role to play in reducing segregation, racism, increasing inclusivity and equity. How do you have a sense of the role that film or arts more generally plays in kind of addressing some of the core issues that our city is facing?
I do. I mean, if I think about I grew up in a very small town in northern Wisconsin, very secluded from, I think I maybe met one person of color before I was 18. I'm not even kidding. Mm-hmm. When I think about what art and culture has done, it's completely changed everything in my mind and helped me look at the world in different ways. Mm-hmm. Cinema, especially when it's done very well, helps you travel to different cultures, different perspectives, different times, and it helps you expand your perspective. Mm-hmm. Art, all art, it helps you expand your perspective, even abstract art. Like, it helps you understand reality in a different way and look at things in a different way. Mm. And that is the first step to any change. Like, if you don't have that, you can't, all the concrete, real monetary policy, all that stuff, like, that cannot happen unless people's minds are changed. And in a way, art can do that, and it can do it gently. There's propaganda art that's like, please change your mind right now. This is, you know, but then there's the, you know what I mean? But then there's cinema and art that kind of welcomes you in a little bit more empathetically. Mm-hmm. And that's how you change people's minds. You could spend $1 million on a marketing campaign that, you know, says like, hey, stop being racist, or, we should do that. But then also, like, you know, I was able to broaden my understanding of other cultures by watching films from those cultures and watching films from those makers and watching films that have heroes with, you know, other cultures in them. So like, that's what art can do. Everyone's got a huge role to play in this, but like, art does that. It expands your mind.
Mm-hmm. You know, Kurt, it's like in my downtime, I found that the pandemic has changed my viewing practices, and maybe this is the way of the world right now. Like, being 46 years old, I'm used to like, gotta watch must see TV at 8 o'clock, and now it's streaming, right? And now I'm like, I've really discovered YouTube. Like, oh wait, I can watch anything I want at any time. I was like, yeah, I'm finally figuring it out. But one of the things that I really got into is documentaries, and CNN has been doing History of the Sitcom, right? And so that resonates with me, because I loved watching sitcoms growing up. And to what you're saying, they were really speaking to the notion of, and again, I just want to amplify or mirror your thought, and it just reframed me with distance and time. The shows like Will and Grace and Ellen, right, helped change the narrative for inclusion for LGBTQ people at a mass level, in a way that they're being named literally in policy. And that, I think that's what you're saying, that's a welcoming kind of way. When 50 million people are watching people be human beings and go through foibles and whatnot, that paired with the other agitprop and the other things going on could help make a river flow in a direction. And it's what you're speaking to. Yes, there's art that could be more pointed and more polemic, but there's also art that also invites one in, and together, right, collectively, it can move in a direction, right, towards a new way. And I guess ultimately, not to get overwhelmed on it, obviously we're called Imagine MKE. What I'm also gathering from you is that in order to imagine a new society that's just different from the status quo, that isn't working for everybody right now, right? It's working for some, not working for everybody. One has to be able to imagine something else, and art and culture is a way towards practicing that imagining thing, because just being able to be in someone else's shoes and understand their narrative means you're willing to let go of your own mental models for maybe 90 minutes. For maybe an hour, right? And that's at least 90 minutes. What would it mean for a little bit longer and a little bit longer? That's what I'm sort of gleaning from what you're saying.
I mean, it's what makes us human, right? It's our ability to imagine. It's what makes us, you know, our ability to remember and project the future. Mm. Those two things are uniquely human traits. And because we can imagine a future, you know, we can make things happen. It's a really special thing. And I think we forget that sometimes. Mm.
You know, pivoting about that, imagining a future, there's a future where there's a film called Corridor. Do you like how I segued there? Like, oh, your head, like, yes, whiplash. You're like, well, transition. That was a whiplash. Like, well, I was not ready for that.
Oh, man.
But you
segue,
you
man. Gotta,
yeah, that was the point. That was the fork point of, like, do we go down, like, this sort of on-being conversation about the nature of art and cinema?
No,
and...
but Kurt's here to plug the movie, man.
We got to plug the movie now, right? That's the moment where we have to go plug the movie.
Right now, Entertainment Tonight is, like, in the waiting room on the Zoom after us. And then after that, it's, you know, whatever. But, yeah, you've got this film called Corridor. You're producing an ensemble caper about a group of night owls whose stories collide one snowy evening. David noted, mm-hmm. It feels Soderbergh-ian. Maybe he's got a little bit of that. There's a new Soderbergh movie out. You know, we saw that trailer. That's all I do is watch trailers now.
yeah.
It does have that feel, though, that tone.
That heist vibe, right? So we really want you to, you know, we're joking about plugging the film, but it's not just about promoting the film. But again, it's the act of creating a film in Milwaukee. A film where you see the War Memorial featured as one of the settings, right? Like, you're filming in Milwaukee, and we'd just love to hear you tell us about what does it mean to make this film, create this film in Milwaukee, and you could also talk about the story of it, but that's really resonates with us, seeing Milwaukee on the big screen.
I am so intimidated right now by you guys, because you're picking up on stuff that's, like, really impressive. Marty Kazabowski, one of the co-writers of Corridor, is a huge Soderbergh nut. He's just... I wish I had him, like, right next to me to, like, respond to that, because I have not done a lot of Soderbergh. And
we don't have to speak. It's not that. It's just David flexing his film stuff.
Right, well, there. I think it might be Marty's ability to sort of, like, bring that out, right? I mean, yeah. we're not smart. Totally. We just see it, right?
Yeah, we just.
Well, that's great. I mean, but I've never heard anyone say that, you know, so that's really, but it's very true. It's like, Corridor is kind of like if you took the Great Muppet Caper and then, you shot it and it had the tone of Point Blank, if you've ever seen yeah. Point Blank, that's Corridor.
That's a hell of a log line, by the way. That's when you're pitching
it. It's a, yeah.
Give me the Great Muppet Caper meets Point Blank. It's like the money.
The Lee Marvin Point Blank, right? Like the back in the day, yes. Point Blank. Yeah.
Correct.
The money just flows at you, Kurt. You're just beating off all the government bonds. That you're throwing.
Yeah, all that Lee Marvin crowd that still exists. So it's directed by, you know, my close collaborator that I met in at UWM in 2008, Jonathan Olson, extremely talented guy. This is his, I think we've done a few features together, but they've been very small, very quiet. This is the first big one, and it really was just truly a collaboration between him, Marty, and our other friend Zach. And it really does feel, not to romanticize it too much, because it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? So I always have to keep my energy when I'm producing a movie as low as possible, because right. It's a 4-year, you know, thing. Yeah. Yeah. But I am getting excited, because to me, this is just, it's a culmination of, like, all of the different people that I've been inspired by, like, along my journey, and just kind of, I'm just walking along being inspired by people like John and Zach. My wife, Lydia, is the art director, by being inspired by all these people and kind of just doing my part to be the glue guy, like the Drew Holiday of this shit. Like, I'm just trying to, like, you know what I mean? I'm picking up where I have, like, just enough skills to, like, kind of fill gaps, which is really important. But really, it's like all these people from my business partners to my creative collaborators to West Tank, like all coming together. And then even better, using a film as a vehicle to meet new weirdos and meet new people is, you know, I have this one story.
Yeah.
In Corridor, there's a Soviet car, Zastava. It looks like kind of like a Volkswagen Beetle. It's this little orange car, and it's for like the big, jolly daytime security guard in the film, played by Katong Ottawa.
Yeah.
And so we were looking for this. We found a website called Commie Cars, and and met this guy. His name is Pep. And he lives in Milwaukee and collects cars from like the Soviet era, brings them over here, fixes them up.
Whoa.
And this guy has now like just become a really close friend of ours, like just a really great guy. And he's like helping produce the movie. Wow. He's like driving to set, driving the car around. He's like the logistics guy. Like he's just so excited about filmmaking and being part of this crew that we named the in-movie energy drink after him. but that's just one of like 100 examples of this community that we're building. It's just this snowball rolling down a hill, getting bigger and bigger and bigger and picking up more and more and more talent. That's what a movie is. And it's just, I don't really give a shit if like it doesn't get into the biggest film festivals in the world. And if we can't do pre-sales in, you know, all the countries and like all the normal like business side of producing, it doesn't really matter to me on this one. You know, as I get older and have kids and stuff, I'll probably have to care about that stuff a little more. But right now it's just beautiful to watch all these people I've met and been inspired by coming together to make something.
I'd say, Kurt, I know enough about movies to be dangerous, right, in terms of that. But it sort of describes, like, I really enjoy, like, Wes Anderson movies. Less for, like, yeah, he's got an interesting form. But it's, like, there's almost, like, a repertory theater group with Wes Anderson movies. Like, you know you can depend on this. And I imagine you're kind of doing the same thing. Like, there's this sort of group of Milwaukee-based folks, you know, on and off the camera that are both incredibly talented but also of the city, right? And it just creates a vibe, right? As soon as you watch the movie, it'll, you know, or whatever projects you do after this, there'll be this vibe because of what all these people bring to it. And that's really cool to hear.
Yeah, it's gonna have its flaws, its dysfunctions. It's like, it's everything that you have about a family. You know, everyone who's watched independent film, I know, I hear like independent films are not always the most, they're not what you expect, because you expect normal movies, and sometimes you watch independent film and you're like, oh, this isn't as good as a normal movie. I have a message for those people right now. Can I just give it? Imagine you're an architect, okay? Imagine you're an architect and you really love mansions or whatever. So you design this mansion and you're so excited and you have the blueprints together, but there's no buyer, and also like it's not up to code, and but it's like a dream house. What we do as independent filmmakers is we're the architects who say, okay, right, we'll just build it ourselves. And we're gonna build it out of whatever materials we have available, and we're gonna do our best, and it's good at some parts of it are gonna be maybe a little bit questionable, but we're gonna do it because we just love houses. We love beautiful houses. Yeah. And we're just gonna build this thing. We're gonna make it happen. So like, do not judge an independent film that you see in the same lens that you do $100 million Hollywood movie, or even a $2 million Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
They're completely different things. And like, independent film is more about the celebration of a collaborative of artists making something.
Yeah.
And that moment when you watch it on the screen, and everyone that's been part of the journey is in that theater is probably, I mean, it's heaven. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's so... Yeah, I agree. It's so exciting. I had a
David's getting the itch now. You're just the way you're talking about. David's like, right. I gotta get back into it.
No, but I'm reminded of "Give Me Liberty," right? A couple years ago, which, you know, I spoke with one of the investors in the film, and they were like, you know, I didn't really get it. It's not for me, but man, was it cool, right? And
yes,
like, it was such a cool movie, right? It, like, this person was just like, I wouldn't see it again, but I would totally invest in it again. I would totally tell people to go see it, because it is fun, it is chaotic, it is, and also captures a sense of Milwaukee that has never been seen before, right? And I think that is exactly why they made that movie, right? Is it captured that sense of sort of a chaotic Milwaukee that just isn't seen. And I think that it's so worthwhile to have those stories and that story told.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. And, you know, Alice just did such a great job pulling that movie together. Yeah. She's such an inspiration. So really
speaking of pulling a movie together, y'all have been doing some fundraising for this movie Corridor, and we'll definitely share the link that listeners can come and also throw a few shekels in the cup to help make it happen. But what's that been like putting this movie, you know, in that sense? Can you tell us about that process and where you hope to be, you know, and all these things about the
maybe
not as glamorous, getting a movie to screen and getting a movie out there.
No, of course. So that's the number one question, right? Every filmmaker, where do I get the money? Where do I get the money to build my dream house, right? I don't have a buyer that wants the house, but I know it's going to be a cool house. Where do I get the money? Money. So we actually just wrapped up a Seed and Spark campaign. So Seed and Spark is this great filmmaker-only crowdfunding platform. And we raised over our goal. We raised $22,000 from friends, family, the public, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then we have that. And then we have some money that we raised from investors and just donors in town. So we actually, I think, have enough now to finish production, to finish mm-hmm. principal photography, it's called. Well, you guys know that. I'm talking to some pros here. So to finish principal photography. So we're going to do that. We're going to shoot sometime this fall. Like, we're just trying to find this one last location. Mm-hmm. And then we need probably another $50,000 to $60,000 for post-production, because there's all these things, you know, editing and sound mixing and reshoots. Like, you have a scene that felt really good 2 years ago when you shot it, but then now it's weird. You know, there's all kinds mm-hmm. of stuff like that. So that's where we're at on the journey. And I think the next step really is, now we're kind of in uncharted waters for me. You know, I've tried to get a lot of movies off the ground. This is by far the most complicated one, and it's gotten the mm-hmm. farthest. And I have a lot of mentors in my life, but the next thing we're really looking for is like an executive producer, someone to come in and help us finish. Someone with connections to funding, with connections to an understanding of what a film festival run goes, like all those kinds of stuff. So, you know, like I said, it's that snowball rolling down a hill. So yeah. Somewhere out there on this snowy hill is like an executive producer that's going to come on and join us. So, and hopefully like getting hit by a snowball. I don't like this analogy. I got to <one. laughs> yeah. Who wants to get crushed by a giant ball of snow?
If it's joyful and fun and exciting, I think everybody, that. Right? That's what we want to make the Corridor. We want to make it the most fun, big, joyful, exciting snowball to get caught up in.
Oh, that's the tagline. There we go.
And so we're gonna pull the camera back. Awful pun. Didn't mean to do that, but we did. Would love to get your takes on just the, and you're speaking this earlier about what it's like to create in Milwaukee, but just to do work in Milwaukee, the industry, if you will. Obviously there's a comparison between like Hollywood and everywhere else, but you've also worked in other parts of the country. Just again, curious from your perspective, just how would you compare how film happens in Milwaukee versus other parts of the country, and you know what you'd celebrate? You've sort of spoken that earlier, and you're also welcome to. It would be even better if .. right? And what might that be?
Well, so here, you know, the thing is, and the truth is, there is not a film industry in Milwaukee. There is a commercial industry that I'm part of, and most of my work and a lot of my creativity goes into commercial projects. And that's where a lot of people that I know that make a living in the city, they do that, right?
That's the marine biology in Iowa part, is what you're saying, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So everything in Milwaukee in the film scene, I would almost call it less than a film industry, is mm-hmm. like, is really about the amateur. And amateur in the best sense of that word. Amateur mm-hmm. in the word that it originally meant, which is the love of the craft. Out here, movies are like a thing. You go and it's 9 to 5 and you kind of hate it. And then you go, well, 9 to 5. They wish 9 to 5. But you know, you go and you work and then you go home, and a lot of the romance is just not it. That's the biggest difference, I think. Movies are really, for me especially growing up, like, you know, Lord of the Rings was my portal to how the world worked. Like, you know, they're a really romantic product, and but when you come out here, everyone's just very, very business about it, which can be kind of clarifying. It can be kind of nice to like take that romance off it and just be like, no, we just got to make a movie and enough people have to see it. Great, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's missing a little bit of that adventure, that sense of adventure that you get in Milwaukee, and the mm-hmm. sense that the stories you can tell mm-hmm. and the all the, it's just like having a startup every time you make a film. There's just so many war stories you can tell with your friends. And so that is what's lovely about Milwaukee's film scene. Are you going to make a living as a feature film director in Milwaukee, Wisconsin? No, but you know, you can do it. And that's exciting.
It's interesting. I had a conversation with somebody recently who has sort of shared this idea that like, if Milwaukee could somehow figure out, whether it's a combination of like tax credits, some other industry development, where we could just get about I can't remember what number he said. He was like 3 to 5 movies getting made, right, every year or two. That would sort of create a churn whereby folks who are in the commercial industry would then not be working in the commercial industry, but then getting their projects off the ground, getting off the festival circuit, and then the next cohort of folks would make the next batch of movies, and that would sort of create a sense of like crew development. We develop some crew depth. We would have, you know, a few more sound. You know, we have like some infrastructure getting built in the city, which would then, you know, potentially siphon off some production from Chicago or Minneapolis. I wonder, for somebody who's in the trenches, right, like you, like somebody actually in the commercial industry, also wanting to make movies, like that feels like probably a good life, right? Like if we could actually make that happen. Agree? Yes, no, thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs sideways?
Thumbs unknown, missing thumbs.
Yeah. Need to learn more.
Yeah. It's complicated and complex, but I mean, my simple, creative, no actual understanding of how finance or anything works would be like, get a huge donation pool together, like a huge one, and then enough that it has a safe interest of like $1 million a year, and just mm-hmm. fund 2 features a year, something like that. Like, or, but I have no idea that's how it works. that's like the private, you know, yeah. And then it's hard because like, ideally it would be more of like what other countries did in the past, like Tarkovsky, all of his films were state funded,
right?
Like all these great, like when you think about great independent filmmakers, it's very rare that their films got to you because of a private enterprise venture. I mean, it obviously happens, but like also they never make money, like, but they need to exist, right? So like, I'm always for like more federal government mm-hmm. funding, because I do think the trouble is like, you can give a huge grant of $1 million and fund a ton of like painters and sculptors, and like you can spread that money everywhere, or give it to one person and make one movie. That's the complication there.
Yeah,
you know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
So it's I mean, my model.
Kurt, if you do that $1 million, there are like craft people, there are set people. I mean, it isn't just one person. There are
true.
A myriad of folks that are attached to that project. That you can make yeah. the argument, oh, there's 50 people involved in this, to your point, right? But I get what you're saying. The optics of it look
yeah.
like, oh, we just gave $1 million to Kurt, the producer. That's that's kind of tough when we, so I get that, but I'm just sort of, I'm offering that there could be another path.
But Kurt's got a big snowball, right? I mean, that's-
Kurt's got a big old snowball,
yeah.
snowball right?
People come do. Join the snowball. You're right. And that's actually what drew me to film, is like, it's the medium that brings all the other mediums together, which is great. I mean, that's why I got into this. I'm such a generalist and I love it all. So mm-hmm. just like film has it all. It is a tough one. I know we're all trying to crack it. I mean, Katie Heil, right. You know, one of my, somebody I look up to huge, and she's played a huge part in this, mm-hmm. like, you know, she's done a lot of work to try to bring more of a film industry here. And it's tough because like, the film industry is imploding right now. The film industry is doesn't exist the way we think it does. It's completely disrupted. Everything is multimedia. Everything is streaming. Everything is content. Like, so I worry sometimes that in Milwaukee, we're trying to bring about an industry that doesn't even exist in Hollywood anymore.
Yeah.
And we're trying to do it like we knew how it worked in the early 2000s and 90s, when like DVDs were literally the only reason indie film got, you know, a lot of indie film got made. And now DVDs don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And you're in a world where it's either Marvel and in huge big stuff or like really, really tiny things, and then a ton of TV. So, you know, it's unfortunately, again, global economic forces being kind of unkind to Milwaukee. It's just so.
And Milwaukee's on a list of other places that it's been unkind to as well. Just going in that list. But I think what you just lifted up, Kurt, is something that, you know, even before our pod, you know, David and I were on it's just a strategy conversation, and David had said, like, I don't want to solve 2021 problems with 2010 solutions, right? And that's what you're speaking to. Like, what?
100%.
That resonated with, you know, David's, you know, when you said that, I wonder, David, if that resonates with you as well. Like, that's Kurt's almost not prescribing anything, because we don't even know what we prescribe for right now, because it's still open-ended, right? Is that what I'm saying?
We need to issue cryptocurrency tokens to fund movies.
I was joking. One of the ways to raise funds is sell NFTs. That's what everyone out here is doing right now. NFT. Oh, have you heard about the latest NFT? Like, it's just NFTs. That's all I hear about out here. I don't understand.
You just hope you're on the ground floor of it, right?
That's right.
You just want to be on the ground floor.
Yeah, no, as long as I'm like part of it, you know.
I bought some
Dogecoin and then lost it all after Musk screwed up his SNL appearance. All right, I'm in it. I'm a crypto guy.
Well, we always ask this question to folks, and maybe our last conversation speaks to it, but we don't want to leave you out of it, right? And again, David and I are contractually obligated to exercise his power. So there's a lot of contractually obligated.
There is a problem, though, given that Kurt is living in Pasadena right now. So I don't know how powerful these powers are going to be in the next 2 minutes.
But let's do it. Let's just do it and roll with it. David and I have the power of making our guests the city's czar of arts and culture. Unfortunately, it only lasts as long as this podcast episode, just about a couple minutes from now. So you got to work quick, Kurt. So what's your reaction? Tell us about the first policies of the Kurt Ravenwood administration, the glorious Kurt Ravenwood administration.
Okay, first policy is I would demand that, to our earlier point, $50 million be put in a fund that generates enough interest to create an artist fund for films.
Yeah.
Second thing is I would immediately cede power to anyone that's not me.
You're out. You're in. That, you did it and you're people, out.
Yeah. I would get the money there and then I would back the hell away and let somebody that is not a straight white guy run that shit because it's, you know, somebody else's turn. So that's what I would do.
Kurt might have been the most efficient. We've never had anyone cede their role like during the pod.
Before the time ran up.
That was a very efficient, and you're now the answer to that trivia question on the pod is who had the shortest turn.
Yeah. Oh, it's a hard job. I don't want it.
But you're able to put 50 mil in the coffers and that would make the interest and support. So that's savvy.
There you go.
And again, it sort of amplifies the point of public investment. You know, we it's a bit of a thought exercise, a joke, but it does affirm the point that how can the public invest in this muscle, right? This narrative muscle, not just putting folks to work, but there's something about telling the story of ourselves and what does it mean in this moment and for people to see themselves in the story, which again, if they see Corridor, you make sure that Milwaukee is seen not just in the locales, but also who's in it as well and who shows up in it. So it's cool that you're walking your talk and it was a glorious run. Me and David are committed to continuing your legacy of your 30-second reign. We might not be good at adding another 50 mil in the coffers, but we're going to do our best.
Not yet.
Just try not to lose it all, guys, and we'll be good.
All right. I will not head over to Potawatomi with it and embed it on black. We got to get to the plugs part. How can our audience find you and or the project and or other things they'll be working on?
Yeah. Okay. All right. You know, plugs, which you're against as a bald by choice man.
Yes. I'm not into plugs. I'm not into plugs.
No
in that
plugs.
Way.
Different plugs kinds of plugs.
Way. Different kind of plugs.
So my plugs are this. Corridorfilm.com. Right. That's where you can see everyone involved in the project and see the trailer, which I'm really just. The trailer is really awesome, so go check that out. You know, my website's kurtravenwood.com. If you're interested in working with me, I clearly wear a lot of hats. I love jumping on cool projects. Like, you know, come check me out there. Yeah, those are the two plugs. I mean, really, honestly, my other plug would be like, if anyone knows of a mid-century modern office interior that retains a lot of its original look and feel, please give me a call, because I've looked at about 200 buildings as the hero building for our film. And it's, you know, it turns out people love to renovate the interiors of offices. So
yeah,
you saw the amazing war memorial in yeah. the trailer. I need that interior now. So if you're out there, come find me.
Love it. We're happy to amplify and signal boost that request. Awesome. That should be a new side gig for us, is just citing. We should just help cite things for people.
Be okay. A side business.
That's our side gig. Kurt, man, it was so much fun. Thanks for being on the pod, man.
Of course, guys. This was awesome. Thank you so much. Again, your ear can hear my damn.
Where did the time go in that interview? It was so fast.
It went so fast. And what's it like? Did you miss it? Did you miss being able to be on the pod and talk to interesting folks?
Couldn't you tell? I was just over enthusiastic with stuff. That's what I was. And thankfully that Kurt was such a gracious, generous guest to allow that. It's so much fun on the podcast. The podcast host is too much. That's such yeah. Anyway, I'll get better. Back to Kurt. I felt like it was a gathering of like-minded people, because the stuff that he was talking about, and he's very modest about it. You know, again, listeners, you obviously didn't catch the off, you know, the stuff behind the scenes, but he was, after the interview, he was sharing like, you know, hey man, I'm just talking, you know, I don't purport to be this policy guru. So if you can cut that out, if that's too crazy. And I have to say, I don't think he's wrong on a lot of stuff about what could be improved and what needs to be better around the, you know, in sort of collaboration in the sector and all that. And so, one, we're going to leave it in, but I think he had some real key insights. What makes Milwaukee great, but also it could be even better if .. So,
you know, we're going to link to all the trailers in the show notes, and I would just encourage everybody to take a look at all of the movies that we mentioned and talked a little bit about tangentially, because, you know, it's just so much fun to be able to at least for me, right, to be able to talk to somebody about like some of these great movie makers, cinematographers and films, and to sort of be able to kind of even have a little bit of imagination about how inspiring sort of seeing these movies for the first time or being inspired by them to go on to make movies like them, right? Like obviously Corridor, as you mentioned, is sort of a mashup of The Great Muppet Caper and Point Blank, just a really weird sort of 70s action movie with Lee Marvin. So just even being able to sort of engage in conversations like that is something I personally really missed, and was really, really appreciated Kurt's bringing that sort of energy and vibe here.
What was the name of the cinematographer that
Vilmos Zsigmond.
Okay, so I also think it's fascinating that given Milwaukee's stature, right, not just in film, but I'm sure another medium, right, visual arts, dance. I love the thought that there's a Vilmos walking around eating a cousin's sub during a break in Milwaukee, right? Like you'd be behind him in line, you know, at a cop's, you wouldn't know, because he's coming through, right? And they're here doing the work. Yeah. You know, they're doing the work. They've been invited to do the work. And I think I'm sure he loved being here, you know, and visiting and being, you know, with the artisans and practitioners here. I think that's also something that there's folks hidden in plain sight, not just the folks that live here, but the kind of talent that comes through, right?
And yeah, visits. That's right.
I love that nuance and all that stuff. So,
how long do you think it took for somebody to be like, "Hey, have you been to Cops yet? Have you had custard?" to Zsigmond when he was here.
I don't know him, but I just would like the thought of like he's at his panel and he's just like crushing like a turtle sundae. You know,
did you get cheese curds yet?
Yeah, he's just chomping on them during his panel. You know, anyways, it's been great coming back, and it's so great to be back with our amazing listeners. Thanks so much, listeners, for hanging out with us again, season 3 of Imagine This Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the pod, share with others, post about it on social, leave a rating, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemkia.org.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort, produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network. Make sure you also listen and subscribe to Black Imagination and back episodes of Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up at Twitter and Instagram at @Imagine_MKE or Facebook, Imagine MKE.
Thanks again, and we will catch you next Tuesday when Sarah Smith-Pancheri and Bob Babish from Summerfest will be joining us to talk about all the exciting news surrounding the return of the world's largest music festival this year. I've got my dates and bands scheduled and my vaccine card. Do you?
Till Tuesday.
Voices carry. Did anybody do an explainer about why they jump letters?
I haven't.
Delta to Lambda?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of letters in between.
I don't know. There is a lot of letters. Did they jump, or is it just that Lambda is the only one?
Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta, Epsilon,
Ito.
Yeah. Ito. What's Ito?
Dude, you Google the Greek alphabet.
No, I had to memorize the Greek alphabet because I was in a stupid fraternity in college. I had to memorize the Greek alphabet. There's no Ito.
What's the ITU one?
Iota.
No, Iota? there's another, whatever. I was not in a Greek fraternity. So I will defer to you.
You'll defer to me. Cause I had to freaking memorize that for pledge week.
This is getting too deep in to,
this is what the listeners love. They love the flights of fancy. They love the digressions.